go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running at a minute past the hour, a minute past 6 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, a minute past 3 in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone on this, the 7th day of July, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that, among other places, is where you go if you would like to be part of the rollicking, madcap, multimedia, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn Chat Room. Just click on Chat Room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and zing, zowie, zap, you'll be right in the thick of things. And you will also be, of course, you will be welcomed, I tell you, by the likes of Anatole and Barquay and Jug of Punch and Squeaky and Steve from Georgistan and VT Blum, all sitting there waiting to make you part of the Friday festivities. Okie dokie, yes. The Head On Radio Network.com, well, the Head On Radio Network is a listener-supported operation. No advertisements here, no paid solicitations, no paid mentions. No, this is truly an independent broadcast community that you have created and you maintain. And just by way of a reminder, I'm planning to be away from the microphone next week. Monday, I leave for Washington, D.C., if we can complete the fundraising this evening. We have raised, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we managed to raise $400 a night so that we could take care of next week's fundraising so that I could actually afford to do all the things necessary to go to Washington, D.C., for an interim report on the status of health research relative to mountaintop removal. And we're very nearly there, but we are not there. We pulled up a little bit short last night. Thank you to our subscribers, and thank you to Angela. It's not as bad as it could be. So, $565. $565 is the fundraising goal this evening. And this is the first time I've really done this straight out. I'm going to use next week's fundraising, and it's going to put us in a bind somewhere down the road, but there's no way of getting around it. Part of the reason for the double fundraising is Coal River Mountain Watch is brokered in the Ten Commandments and poorer than Job's turkey. That's the way it goes when you're a grassroots organization fighting for the basic human dignity and human rights and human health of people in regard to the predatory practices of a monster outlaw billion-dollar organization like Coal, Big Coal. So in order to be able to go, we have to finish, we have to finish that fundraising. We have to knock down that $565 this evening so that, because there's a car rental involved, I have to leave the family vehicle here so Ferg can get back and forth to work. There's a car rental involved, and there's hotels involved, and even yogurt is more expensive in D.C. than it is here. And dear God, hotels are expensive in D.C. Oh God, so expensive in fact that I will be staying out in Manassas, which is like a 47-mile commute one way, but. And It's not some frivolous sword. No, no. This is a matter of going and being there for people who would otherwise be voiceless in this process. So if you would like to help us create yet another Friday on the Front Porch human miracle, well, then just go on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the Contribute tab, and do what you can. Do what you can. And it is all sincerely appreciated. We'll get it all started, courtesy of Dr. John, with a $50 challenge this evening. Dr. John wrote to me earlier this evening. He's in the thick of things, a young family on the grow, and a new job in the process of development. But he said, "You haven't heard from me for a while, so put a $50 challenge on the table to get things going this evening." And so there we are. We do that, and we'll be down to $465 to go if somebody will meet Dr. John's challenge at the beginning of the program. Now, program reminder, this program's only 2 hours, but it's also Friday, which means Friday on the Front Porch. And that being the case, we would ordinarily I'd fill a Bobster for an hour, and then we'd jump over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. But because I'm subbing for Mike Malloy again tonight at 9 p.m., we'll be shutting things down at 8 p.m. so that I can change all the interfaces around and redate the recordings and and upload the programs. A lot of stuff. So that being the case, instead of me filibobstering for an hour, I'm going to go straight over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable with the reminder that if you would like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, it's one of those, kind of stand not upon the order of your connecting, but connect at once. All right? Does that make sense? Right. So, if you've never participated in the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, as moderated for these many, many, many years by the one and only Spacing Guildmaster, Sparky, then it's easy. Just get on Skype and send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail and get you right into the conversation. Okay? If you absolutely need a conventional telephone connection, we have one of those for you as well. Namely, the stress line, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N, and you will be part of this conversation. So enough shilly-shallying about. Let's run right over and check in with Sparky and the folks he has gathered together for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening and see what's on folks' mind. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
Pretty good, I think.
I'm staying out of the heat. 108 today.
Oh, but it's a deadly heat, right?
Yeah, it's a deadly heat for old people.
That's pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm.
I
can't stand to be out in it very long. I'll
no,
tell you.
No, truly. All kidding aside, that's hateful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, are the with heat like that? Are all the what you had in the way of ice cap or snowpack on top of Lassen and Shasta pretty much gone?
Lassen's almost gone. The Shasta still has a pretty good snowpack. It's a taller mountain, but I'm sure the south side will melt off fairly quick. since there's no glaciers left on the south side, only on the north side.
Yeah. No, no glaciers, of course. Speaking of which, did you happen to see, you know, the G20's going on, and there will be plenty to talk about in that regard. But did you happen, you know, when you do these things, you come up with fun things for the family and spouses to do. Did you happen to read about that?
Oh, yes, I happened to read about it, and I actually saw a little video of the place where they're still blocked out by protesters.
What in God's name is that interference? Did you hear that?
No.
Huh, strange.
There's a little crack on here again.
That sounds like Martin the Martian.
Okay, so I'm not the only one. Just in case people didn't know, Angela Merkel's husband, who is a physicist, a smart guy, lots smarter than, say, Donald Trump, for the field trip for the family, friends and family, they get to go to, what's the official name of this place? I've got it right here.
Some kind of computer, climate computers central place.
The German Climate Computing Center, which has been open since 1987, is where they do a lot of the computer modeling that shows what climate change is going to do to the planet. And so, lo and behold, it puts precious Ivanka and melanoma in a bit of a spot. Because if they don't go, then it looks pretty obvious that they're being incivil. And if they do go, they're going to wind up being confronted by the science that shows that no, climate change is not a cruel hoax perpetrated by the Chinese in a laboratory in Germany. Because now we have to add in a laboratory in Germany, because we know that that's no. And that of course will that'll piss Clementine Caligula right off. So I thought that was a nice touch. Big old room full of supercomputers with climate change modeling and mapping. And as the article I'm looking at notes, stuff President Trump wouldn't understand. And Jesus, isn't
that
the truth?
Yeah, but they didn't go.
They didn't go?
No, because the had protesters all around. They were German. Police wouldn't let them out of the house or something.
Ah, rats. Makes me wonder if those were planted protesters.
I don't know, but helicopter.
I'm sorry, you were lost in some electronic noise on that last one.
Donnie comes and goes to the government house by helicopter.
Hey, yeah.
How's your Donnie doing, Sparky?
Dead.
Okay, good.
Gone. I'm on
the only
the
good Donnie is.
I'm on the trap laundry room now.
I thought maybe they were chewing your wires and causing that weird sound I keep hearing.
No, that's coming from Bob.
Strange.
That's coming from me.
Yeah, the way I hear it and see it, I hear it, when you talk, I get the scratchy sound too. I don't know if anybody else is hearing it.
Okay, were you hearing it before I opened the call?
Well, no, nobody was on the line to the call.
Okay, because what I'm getting, I only hear it when your mic engages. So I don't know. I don't know if it's. I tell you what. Let's run over and check in with a couple other people, and then if we continue to make the noise, then maybe it is me. Billable Rick, thank you for meeting Dr. John's challenge. I just got your note. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yeah. We need a Friday night miracle here to help you you know, get to DC, advocate for all the folks who, you know, otherwise don't have a voice, and, you know, see what we can do with getting the AIC Act passed, you know?
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if the AIC campaign was fully funded?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
But
it's been a while since I've kicked in some money, so I figured it's a good as any time to do it, right?
Well, while I'm there, I'm also going to try to and I'm going to put it to good use. While I'm there, I'm going to try to take a couple of meetings up on Capitol Hill as well. This particular meeting's out by the Verizon Center for people who know their D.C. You know, just try to see if we can get some. We're still trying to get some movement on the AIC Act in the Senate. And it's like pulling teeth.
Well, you know, you'd think that there'd be enough senators who'd be brave enough to do something, to take a stand, I guess. Maybe, you know, maybe it's because they're politicians and, you know, they don't like to take position, you know. I mean, coal is obviously going out.
it kind of depends on how we define that, Rick. I mean, it's not going out here. The blasts are still going off. People are still being poisoned. People are still being exploited.
Mm.
And the coal industry, despite a slew of bankruptcies, the bankruptcy court lets them keep scads and scads and scads of money, which they then use to influence politicians.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so, for instance, even for a reasonably democratic guy like, say, Dick Durbin of Illinois.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, he's got some. I mean, of course, he's insufficiently pure. They all are. But you know, he's done some decent things in his career, and you know, you go through his door, and you know, it's a lost cause, because Illinois is a coal state, and he is deeply co-opted by the coal industry. And there are a lot of people like that.
I guess they produce a lot of coal in southern Illinois?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, in fact...
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Can I start an action?
Yeah, shut it down and restart it. Maybe it'll be better. Maybe restart your headset or something. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'm going to shut this down for a minute, and then lightsaber me, and we'll get right back to it. But seriously, I don't think I was being unserious on the, but you know what I mean. There are a lot of members of the Senate, you know, Democrats, almost all of the Republicans, but Democrats who have, over the years, had their pockets lined, their campaign war chests filled with donations from the coal industry. And so that adds a hurdle into the mix. Okay, let's try this again. Any better? You there, Sparky?
Not really. Can you hear me?
I hear you for the moment, yeah.
Okay, it hasn't really gotten any better. Somebody else. Causing it or not, but just go down.
Same old headset?
My headset?
Yeah.
I'll change headsets to see if that's anything.
Well, I just had a note saying it's only coming through. It's only coming through from Sparky, nobody else. So I don't know.
I was able to hear it. Bob. It almost sounds like a bug zapper.
It sounds like a
interference of some sort.
Well, or a 1970s marijuana influenced LSD influenced synthesizer run.
Hey, there you go. Yeah. Now it sounds clear for some reason.
Yeah, I think it had something to do with Sparky's headset, maybe.
Okay. That could be. That could be.
You can get all kinds of weirdness with all this wireless technology that's around now. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah, it is, Sparky.
Okay.
Yeah. So you got some brush clearing that you're going to be doing, Bob, this weekend?
I'm hoping to. After the most beautiful June in recent memory, July has been pretty rainy.
Oh.
And so all of my all of my hard work has grown back up.
Oh, geez.
Well, I mean, not completely, but yeah, I'm hoping to get a little work done before I get out of here. I've got to go to the laundromat, do some laundry. Hopefully do some yard work, get packed, and then get out of here as early on Monday as I possibly can.
Okay.
It's about a six and a half hour drive.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to rent a car to get there? Is that the idea?
Yeah, because they've got to have the car. They've got to have the family car here to get Ferg back and forth to work.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, yeah, we'll definitely miss your show, but glad that you're going to be out there and, you know, seeing what you can do. And, you know, maybe you could get Dick Durbin to go along.
Well, you know what? So that's a struggle. What I don't understand is why it's so doggone hard to get somebody like, say, Jeff Merkley on board. Up in Oregon. Or Sheldon Whitehouse in Rhode Island. Or Murphy or Blumenthal in Connecticut.
Right.
Because none of them have any qualms about what coal does and what mountaintop removal does. Unless people have gotten to them who have greater access and bigger budgets, and have gotten to them and made them think that coal is over, that coal is done. You know, that is that's the biggest, most damaging lie that we have to contend with. And the thing is, it doesn't come from the coal industry. I mentioned briefly last night this National Geographic documentary, From the Ashes.
Okay.
It was free. I don't know if it's still free for viewing, but it was. I watched it, and, you know, I was pretty disgusted.
Sorry I told you about it now, Bob.
Well, don't apologize. I needed to know about it, and I would have found out about it anyway, but I wanted to... I thought you might find it interesting to share with you something that went out yesterday. Most of us have seen that documentary, Gasland, right?
Both of them.
Yeah, Josh Fox, okay?
Yeah, one and two.
Well, Josh Fox and some other activists released a statement yesterday. And I'm just going to read it here. I'm sorry, I'll try not to make it too boring. From the Ashes, a new documentary on the coal industry directed by Michael Bonfilio, distributed by National Geographic and funded by former New York City mayor and one-time presidential candidate Michael Bloomberg, is drawing bitter opposition from environmentalists, mountaintop removal opponents, Appalachian community activists, and coal miners. The film presents the history and future of the U.S. coal industry, interviewing coal mining families and communities, leaders of big green environmental groups, and other experts, and argues for transitioning away from coal in a way that does justice to coal mining communities. But that's not the source of the complaint. What environmental activists are objecting to is the way the film purports to be concerned about coal miners and coal mining communities while exploiting their plight to advance an ulterior, undisclosed agenda of boosting the fracked gas industry, which, because of massive methane emissions, water contamination, and other problems, is every bit as damaging to the climate, environment, and public health as coal. The film is funded by Michael Bloomberg and deeply entwined with his networks. Bloomberg and his allies, including big green leaders the film interviews, have been vociferous in their support for expanding natural gas and fracking as a bridge fuel, where have we heard that before, to more sustainable energy. But in fact, say environmental advocates fighting fracking, fracked gas extraction and infrastructure will enrich elite investors at the expense of the climate and the environment. From the Ashes is the first feature film to be produced by Bloomberg Philanthropies. It partnered with Radical Media, a production company that previously worked with the Bloomberg administration on various projects. From the Ashes premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, which the mayor's office was instrumental in founding. And it goes on, and Chuck Nelson, a friend of mine, retired UMWA coal miner. Chuck said, after watching this film, I was infuriated. The Sierra Club did not end mountaintop removal. In fact, Bloomberg's money for Sierra's efforts to end coal has led to the current fracking boom and natural gas pipelines destroying what's left of Appalachia. Beyond coal represents the money in the Sierra Club from the natural gas industry, from Chesapeake to Bloomberg. It's done nothing good for the people living here in West Virginia, Virginia, and Kentucky. Maria Gano, another colleague, said, I've fought the impacts of the coal industry in Boone County, West Virginia, all my adult life. I was born and raised here. Mike Bloomberg and Carl Pope couldn't handle living like we do for a day, and they wouldn't know coal if they tripped over it. While he was executive director of the Sierra Club, Carl Pope accepted $26 million from Chesapeake Energy to kill one fossil fuel, coal, to benefit natural gas fracking and pipelines. Then Mike Bloomberg gave Sierra Club $80 million to shut down coal-fired power plants with no consideration for how it left the coal miners and the people of Appalachia. There was no plan for them in beyond coal. We're worse off now than ever. To add insult to injury, profits from this film go to the Rockefeller Fund. Don't let them fool you. These organizations owe Appalachia, too. They're morally responsible for its demise. Exploiting already exploited people for money is wrong. And it goes on. And this is the kind of thing that more than the influence of the coal industry, frankly, which I just acknowledged, makes it so damn difficult to make any progress here. You've got a lot of people, I mean, in many ways, politicians, what have you, are just like ordinary folks. They believe what they're told. And if you're on our side of the aisle and you read a bunch of these happy, smiley articles saying coal is dead, you probably believe it. But it couldn't be further from the truth. And in the particular case of this film, they even went so far as to use drone footage that was obtained by a staff member of Coal River Mountain Watch and didn't even credit Coal River Mountain Watch or acknowledge that Coal River Mountain Watch is leading the charge and has been for years against mountaintop removal in Appalachia. And that's just shitty. Is it okay for me to say that? Isn't it shitty? Because it feels pretty shitty.
Yes.
Yeah, it's theft, Bob. You've got to acknowledge the sources that you're using, you know? Basic journalistic principle, you know?
Well, some of the footage is said to have come from Radical Media. Radical Media. No, Radical Media is the production company, and Radical Media got the footage from Cold River Mountain Watch.
Yeah.
So
Wasn't it in another movie?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, but how'd they get the footage to use it?
Coal River Mountain Watch permitted them to use it. And then they didn't credit it.
Oh.
That sucks.
Well, there goes my question.
Well, couldn't you ask them for a credit or something?
Well, those discussions are taking place. But, you know, that's about as much as can really be said. But the bottom...
You don't have a high-powered attorney.
We don't have a low-powered attorney. We don't have an attorney.
A super lawyer.
Yeah, well, what we need is one of them highfalutin Hollywood lawyers what knows how to make filmmakers squirm and sweat. know any of those billable, Rick?
Not really. Not really. I'm just a tax attorney. That's all.
Keep your pink little ears perked up next time you're out at a concert or something. You never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, yeah, I will.
Because everybody knows somebody in L.A., right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Everybody has a script and everybody has a treatment.
There you go. Bob, what is worse, I mean, for the environment? I mean, natural gas isn't really a hell of a lot better than coal, right, in terms of the overall environmental effects?
Okay, it's a tough question. Kinda, but not really.
You want to be poisoned or you want to be hung? Is that the choice that it is, basically?
Sorta, but okay. I mean, I work mainly on mountaintop removal, and so I'm biased. What I can tell you is that we know that the dust generated, the blasting dust and the particulates generated by mountaintop removal poison a certain number of people near where it's done every year. We also know that there are emissions from frack pads, and that there are even particulates in that regard. But you said, what's worse for the environment? It is acknowledged that coal is the filthiest fossil fuel ever. Okay? If you set two fires, one with coal and one with, you know, just a drum of crude oil, the coal is actually dirtier. So that's a bigger problem. It's dirtier, but there's greater use of natural gas now because of this big lie that's been promulgated that it's a bridge fuel to the future. And what it is that bridge is to, species extinction.
Right, a bridge to nowhere, so to speak.
And there is far more evidence of undeniable health impacts from mountaintop removal. Well, let's put it this way. So they've got a fracking ban in New York State, right?
Yeah.
Well, Governor Cuomo enacted that fracking ban with far less empirical data upon which to rely than what we have in Appalachia relative to the health impacts of mountaintop removal. Does that tell you something?
I guess New York lives matter.
Yeah, and hillbilly lives don't.
Well, I'm not saying that, but that's what that's what you would infer. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Again, you guys are like the sacrificial lambs, I guess, you know, unfortunately. You know, it's clearly amoral, you know?
No, I'm at immoral. Amoral is without morals. Immoral is having morals, and the morals you have are bad ones.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Immoral is a better word. You're right. So, yeah, I mean, that's a fucked up situation. I mean, there's no reason why, you know, mountaintop removal should be going on at this point.
And yet, for some reason or another, we have to contend not only with our enemies, the coal industry, and I use that word advisedly, and I use that word correctly, but we also have to contend with our allies. By the way, note coming in from Arnold. Infant mortality rates in counties in Pennsylvania with fracking have gone up 40%. In my view, mountaintop removal and fracking are the same, equal, completely unnecessary at this time in history. Solar, wind, tidal, geothermal. There's plenty of ways to feed the energy demand if we actually try. And a lot of that's absolutely true. Arnold continues and says, in the last several months,
We've been all over New York State, mostly southern tier, but once you're 75 miles north of the city, everybody would frack it all to hell. So, you know, that's worth, you know, watch this space in the coming years. But, you know, there are problems, and I acknowledge them because I live in reality world. There are problems with renewable energy, and they have to be solved. We're not there yet. Transmission problems. But, you know, just plain boring vanilla around the house problems. Like I said, I've looked into going completely off the grid here. And this, you know, I joke about the mansion. This is no mansion. But the cost to go completely off the grid here, everything, tell Appalachian Power to come and take their stupid cable and leave, is north of $100,000.
Whoa.
And that's not just because it's West Virginia. It's because of the amount of storage you have, the inverters, the size of your array. And even then, okay, even then, you still can't power something like a traditional electric furnace. You can run a refrigerator. You can run a stove. Maybe a well pump. But to run a big ticket item like heat in winter or cool in summer, not happening yet. Mm. Not there. Technology isn't there. So even if you're off the grid, you're still probably relying on a wood stove or, more often than not, propane or natural gas. And that's where it becomes, that's where the conflict comes in. That's where it becomes difficult. So, you know, maybe that answers some questions. Hey, let's check in with some other folks. Steve from Georgistan, how are you this evening?
Bob, what's going on, man?
You know, 4 hours of radio to do tonight, and we've knocked down 37 minutes of it.
That's awesome, man. I really appreciate you going out there and fighting a good fight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your appreciation.
Sincerely, well, I have a vested interest in this, and I don't mean to sound selfish. We all do, you know. We can't keep blowing up our mountaintops. That's just ridiculous, man.
Well, and beyond that, it's not just the mountaintops, Steve. We can't keep blowing up our mountain ranges.
Right. And as far as the coal versus natural gas, doesn't coal dust seep into the groundwater and cause sludges, ponds, and just all kind of unsavory things? No,
well, what actually happens is the process of mining coal, wherever there's coal, there's water. Okay?
Right.
If you mine coal in the desert, you're still going to mine coal, and it's going to be near water. Because coal formed in ancient swamps. But when you mine it, you have stuff that's left over. And that gets pushed over into valley fills here in Appalachia. And then with all the water, you got to do something with that. And meanwhile, you're burying streams. So you wind up with these settlement ponds, which are sludge ponds, which aren't ponds, which are fucking seas. You know, we're talking about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 billion gallons of toxic waste.
Flooded out a whole town in 73. I read a book about that.
Buffalo Creek disaster. Killed people.
It's horrible. Just a horror. The worst horror story you could ever read, you know.
Yeah, and that was just a little, you know, few million gallons sludge dam that burst. The ones they build now are billions of gallons, Steve. But they're still made out of the same thing they made that one out of, namely dirt and rock.
And there's a town in Centralia, Pennsylvania, Bob, that's been on fire since 1963.
Yeah,
everybody had to leave.
That's an underground mine fire. Yeah,
right.
And they can't
Some
put it out.
Some knucklehead thought it was a good idea to burn his trash in a well, and it caught on fire, and they have no way of putting it out.
And they never will.
They predict it's got enough fuel down there to burn till they can't even determine when it's going to be able to get put out. So the natural gas versus coal thing, I'm of the opinion they're both evil as hell. But, you know, if somebody stuck a gun to my head and said you have to choose one or the other for the rest of your life, I would probably lean more towards natural gas as long as you didn't frack to get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's the other ways are nasty too. Let's be sure.
Yeah.
Let's be clear about that. Arnold just asked me, what year did they start mountaintop removal? It's really interesting because there's a historical point of reference for it, and of all places, it comes from a Kurt Vonnegut book. And I think it's either in Breakfast of Champions or God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. But the protagonist is traveling through West Virginia, and Kurt Vonnegut has this paragraph, and I remember many years ago, Reverbo sent it to me. And he talks about how he was traveling through West Virginia, and he said, and they were blowing up their mountains for heat. And in point of fact, the first mountaintop removal job went in about 15 miles from here by road. It's probably 15, you know, it's probably, you know, a mile or two by air as the crow flies, in 1972. And that was at the height of massive protests against surface mining, what was called strip mining. And there was a great groundswell of support to just outright ban the damn practice because it was ruining everything in Appalachia. And the coal companies weren't even pretending to give a damn about what happened after the coal was gone. And so this fight went from the late 50s through the 60s, you know, when people were hollering about ending the war and those issues in other parts of the country, activists in Appalachia were saying, how about ending the war on us? And it all culminated in the late 1970s. The activists, the grassroots activists, had gotten within, not striking distance, but seeing distance of an actual ban on strip mining. And along came the Sierra Club. And they said, no, 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 you stupid little hillbillies. We know what's better. We're supporting a new bill. It's called the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. And it's going to regulate strip mining so that the coal industry can do it responsibly, because we got to have them jobs. And coal is an important part of our energy mix. And it's economically important in the export market. And it's how we get our electricity. So sit down and shut up, stupid little hillbillies who don't like having entire mountains of mud winding up in your kitchen. Sit down. Shut up. We're the Sierra Club. We know better. And so the Sierra Club slipped the shiv into the backs of everybody in Appalachia and everybody who's ever had to deal with strip mining. And in 1977, President Jimmy Carter reluctantly signed into law the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. And he did. It was reluctant. He said, I don't like this. I don't want this. I disagree with this. And it became law. And the cork got pulled out of the bottle, and the coal tar genie came busting out, and we've never been able to put it back since. and all the regulations that made it possible for mountaintop removal to exist had been built into a law that the Sierra Club encouraged to be passed. And then as labor costs went up, they were still doing underground mining in Appalachia. And like around 1980, there were 100,000 coal miners, if you can imagine it, in West Virginia. But the coal industry always wants to maximize the profit and minimize the cost. And when it comes to minimizing costs, the first place they always look is, how can we do this and pay less people at the same time? And it takes a lot of people to do underground mining. A lot of people. On the other hand, if you just go to the bank and you get enough money to buy yourself a few D9 cats and some giant dump trucks with tires the size of three-story houses, well, you can take down 5,000 acres in 5 years with about 10 people. And in the latter years of the Clinton administration, they began to ramp up mountaintop removal, and with the arrival of George W. Bush in the White House, they went absolutely hog wild. And so now, an area the size of the entire state of Delaware is gone.
Never get it back either.
Nope. 2,500 miles of lovely little streams.
They try to
appease
people by saying, oh, we're going to plant all these pretty trees after we blow these mountains up.
It's bullshit.
Right.
Yeah. You can.
Bob, there's a John Grisham novel called Gray Mountain where.
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
They actually reached out to us and wanted us to allow his publisher to sort of ride our hillbilly backs. And we said no thanks.
No thanks. Well, I read it at your recommendation. I believe I asked you if it was worth a read, and you said yeah.
It is. It's a good book.
Yeah. Yep.
John Grisham is a real Jim Dandy legal sort of wrangling suspense writer. It's a good novel, and he gets a lot of it right. It's just that we weren't quite comfortable being a promotional vehicle.
Exactly, or being used as tools to promote his book. I get it, man. I get it. I don't blame you.
Yeah, and even I'm looking in the chat room here. Barkway mentions having seen The Last Mountain. I participated in the promotion of that film. Hell, I'm in it for about 1.9 seconds.
Where at? Do you know exactly?
If it was Star Trek, I'd have a red shirt on and I'd be deader than Adam's house cat.
I know where the film event from you happened at is that West Virginia, environmental permit thing deal when Robert Kennedy was there.
Right. So yeah, Bobby showed up to a rally that Coal River Mountain Watch organized. And you
said something to the effect, like, let them hear you in that building over there. And
right.
That was it.
That was my line, yes. I still haven't gotten around to putting up my IMDb page for it yet.
Did you get it in one take?
Yeah. cut. Hey. We need the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, mountaintop removal protesting miners over there. We need y'all a little more pissed off. Could y'all holler motherfucker a little louder? We need you to make Bobby and JFK jokes at his nephew at their nephew and son a little louder. Because that's great filmmaking. No, we got it in one take. But the thing is, there's this scene in there where Bobby, ever so sincerely, says, you know, here on Coal River Mountain, they're looking at putting in a wind farm, and we're going to see if we can help them do that. Never heard from him again.
Well, damn, I didn't know not only were you a famous news anchor, but you're a movie star. I'm going to have to get your autograph, Bob.
Hoo-wee! I was just over there on the Matthew McConaughey set, and you know what they got over there, Uncle Jed? Motivation. That's what they got. They're up there swimming in motivation. That's what we need. Motivation.
Motivation. Oh, that was actually filmed in Georgia. Easy there, brother. Easy.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I was at the store yesterday, and it's just how my mind works. It's like yesterday morning when I had to get up too early, and I saw MSNBC's First Look and realized that one of their anchors looks like the Star Trek long-faced alien. And you know, that's just, you'll just have to watch it sometime at 5 o'clock in the morning and tell me if I'm wrong. But I was at the store, and it's tourist season here, so we got a lot of folks who ain't from around here, and we had some really sincere, raised right, young, apparently Christian kids, and one of them had this T-shirt on, and I forget what the exact word was on the back of the T-shirt. It was for some conference or something. But it showed the dead nail-holed hand of Jesus just kind of like reaching upward on the back of his T-shirt. And I looked at Agnes and I said, would you look at that, honey? She said, oh, yeah. I said, doesn't that look like the hand sticking up out of the water motif from Deliverance? She went, I'll be damned. And I said, sure do got a pretty soul.
Or the horror movie Carrie, one of the two. Oh, gosh.
Well, I guess it was funnier at the time. You guys are a tough audience.
No, I thought it was funny.
No, that was funny, Bob.
You got a lot of people that want to get in here, Bob. I wanted to talk healthcare, but I'm going to save that till next Friday. So we'll circle back to that next Friday. Sound good?
Yeah, and if I can get back before then, I will.
Okay. Nice talking to you, Bob, and have a safe trip, brother.
All right, thanks, Steve. I'm sure
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sparky.
Did you realize John Podesta was in your state today?
No.
On a cross-country trip?
I kind of missed that.
Well, he responded to Trump's tweet this morning. Did you read that?
Oh, yeah, I did read that. And good for him. Of course.
Well, the first thing he said in his tweet was he was traveling across the country and they were stopped somewhere in West Virginia.
But we have to remember that if Hillary Clinton is the devil, then John Podesta absolutely must be Asmodeus or something. Or maybe Mephistopheles. So he's insufficiently pure. But I thought it was good that he responded to Trump. And you know, it's a pity more people aren't talking to Trump like Trump deserves to be talked to. But, you know, at least he didn't just sit there and take it.
No, and Morning Joe was like, he has voices in his head. I heard seen that clip. He listens to the voices in his head, and then he tweets.
And that's, you know, true. And by, you know, and I saw where, yeah, Mika said that this morning. He's listening to the voices in his head. And hey, Mika, I didn't know you were listening. Cool. Appreciate it. Because it was, I think, a week or so ago that I, paraphrasing the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, I said, I have heard the Spirochetes tweeting each to each, or yeah. And I think I said the love song of J. Alfred Trumpfrock or something like that. So we've been talking about the spirochetes talking inside his head, and apparently it's finally filtered all the way to the 30 Rockefeller Center. So, yeah, there's that. Got a note from Chris in Florida. Sorry, Bob, can't do chat or Skype. I'm here listening, though. Study attached showing fracked natural gas as bad or worse than conventional fossil fuels, including coal. Just an excerpt. In April 2011, we published the first peer-reviewed analysis of the greenhouse gas footprint of shale gas, concluding that the climate impact of shale gas may be worse than that of other fossil fuels such as coal and oil because of methane emissions. We noted the poor quality of publicly available data to support our analysis and called for further research. Our paper spurred a large increase in research and analysis, including several new studies that have better measured methane emissions from natural gas systems. Here, I review this new research in the context of our 2011 paper and the fifth assessment from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released in 2013. The best data available now indicate that our estimates of methane emissions from both shale gas and conventional natural gas were relatively robust using these new best available data and a 20-year time period for comparing the warming potential of methane to carbon dioxide. The conclusion stands that both shale gas and conventional natural gas have a larger GHG than do coal or oil for any possible use of natural gas, and particularly for the primary uses of residential and commercial heating. The 20-year time period is appropriate because of the urgent need to reduce methane emissions over the coming 15 to 35 years. And I believe that to be true. On the grand scale, and maybe I didn't make myself clear, on the grand scale of things, though, we've burned a lot more coal. We are in the fix we are in because of the coal we burned, you know, and the oil, too. But coal was the first hydrocarbon to be burned. On any kind of a scale. But thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Yeah, Charlie, what?
I had to unmute there. If people really want to see what mountaintop removal is about, they need to go up on the border of southern Kentucky and southern Virginia and over toward Pound, Virginia, and Jenkins, Kentucky, up in that area.
Yep.
And you'll see exactly firsthand what it's how it screws up the land.
Wise County, Virginia, right there. Yep. On the right there on the Kentucky line with Harlan is another something like 45% of Wise County, Virginia is just gone.
Yep. And the sad thing about it is people think that, you know, whenever they hire somebody to bring in a thin layer of topsoil and spray their seeds on it, that they're putting it back like it was, and they're not. It's not even close to what it was.
Nope, not even. And hydro seed just makes me laugh anyway, because that's non-native grass, which means that it's an invasive species.
Yeah, I used to live real close to that area back whenever I was growing up. I'm originally from Kingsport.
Not too far from Bristol.
Right. And you just head up 23 toward Gate City and then turn back west over toward the Kentucky line. And, you know, you go in there where they've been strip mining and it looks like a war zone.
Feels like one, too, when they're blasting.
And I'm sure that the groundwater is very much contaminated there. I've never heard anybody comment on it, but it doesn't take much common sense to look at the landscape and figure out that a lot of that stuff's made it down into the water table.
Absolutely. And you know, what makes it worse, Charlie, you mentioned the water's not fit anymore. One of the most magnificent things about Appalachia, whether it be northeast Tennessee or southwest Virginia, eastern Kentucky, west Virginia, is this really is, no kidding, a temperate rainforest.
Yeah.
And we get, relatively speaking, a lot of rain here. And that means that we used to have a lot of really, really exquisitely good water. So one of the reasons that people, when the settlers were coming across, one of the reasons that they stopped here is having access to clean water is, you know, one of those existential things.
Yeah.
And a lot of people had wells. There was a well here. When this place was first built, my grandmother designed it, and she designed it with a gravity-fed cistern system, one below the ground, one above it. Every roof was guttered, and every gutter led to the cistern. And that was the water that they would use for laundry and dishwashing, bathing. And then there was a drilled well that was 72 feet deep. And that water was crisp and clean and pure and wonderful.
And it came
out of the ground, Charlie, as cold as if it had come out of a water cooler fountain.
Yeah.
And that well got ruined when they strip mined out the road here.
Yep.
And then they brought in city water, so-called city water. And a lot of people got city water specifically because the coal industry ruined their wells. Now, they weren't paying for their well water, but now they got a water bill, and we've got a little, a kind of a little mini Flint going on down in Huntington, West Virginia. Very few people know about it. But there are thousands of people in Huntington, West Virginia right now, thousands of people who do not have water into their homes, because over 1,000 homes in Huntington have been turned off because of 30 days, people are more than 30 days late paying their sewer bill. This is not a joke. The Huntington Sanitary Board has sent thousands of shutoff requests to West Virginia American Water. There have been 4,000 requests sent since April. 1,055 more were sent on June 28th. There are 22,000 accounts, and those that are 2 months past due are nearly $894,000. And since they've started their shutdown action, they've had to put an off-duty police officer at the sanitary board office because people who have their water taken away from them get a little pissed off, and they spit at the service representatives, and they punch the bulletproof glass that they have the people sitting behind.
Well, the service representatives aren't really responsible for it. I would hate to see that. It's, you know, it's if they would go to their city council people and punch them a few times, it might get more results.
Right.
And I don't know. Down in Roane County, Tennessee, a few years ago, down where they have the steam generating this what do you call it the power station down there that's uses steam. I think they had one of their dumping things break, and it got into the river down there, and it poisoned a whole bunch of water in Tennessee, in central Tennessee. Well, it was down below Knoxville.
Yeah, it was on the what, Clinch, and it was around Norris.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Norris Dam there and all. Yeah. And you know, it was kind of sad because people just don't realize that when you burn coal, it throws soot into the air and all. But that's not the end of the story. And they don't realize that there's more to the story than just the pollution caused by the burning of coal. It's a lot of it's what's happened after the coal burns, and what they do to get rid of it.
And before it burns, Charlie, that's why coal can never be clean. Because if you're poisoning thousands of people when you extract it from the ground, It's dirty. It's a kind of dirty that can never be washed. And so, I mean, that's exactly what you're dealing with. Yeah. And I'm glad that I've got somebody in the conversation that's seen this firsthand, because it's important. And since there's a little lull in the conversation here, at 5 minutes past the hour, I want to send out thanks to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy in Georgistan. We just went from. Wait a minute. I'm trying to do the calculation here. Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus and Twiggy just took us down by another $21. And with Dr. John's challenge having been met by Rick, that takes us down to $443 to go for our little...
Bob?
Yeah.
$443?
Yeah, $443 to go to finish the week.
Okay, well, if you say $243, I'll put in the last $200 if somebody meets at $243. Fills that in
okay.
By the end of the show.
Okay, so we got a $243 hole to fill in. It's kind of a matching challenge. Sparky will finish it off if we can round up $243. So thank you, Sparky. Thank you very kindly.
It's important you get to DC. I hope. I could start a Friday on the Front Porch Miracle.
I hope so too, and that would be a big part of it. So, we've got about 52 minutes to round up $243. So we'll cross our fingers. Thank you, Sparky.
Howdy.
I don't even have to put in the dollar. One illegally from Steve.
Well, no, I see Steve already ponied that up, even though he knew he'd been set up.
Howdy, y'all.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
I'm okay. Y'all know so much more than I'll ever know, because I don't have the experience to know about all this stuff about the environment and, you know, all the stuff Charles and you and discussing that, but I guess...
Don't sell yourself short, Larry. You know a lot.
But in any case, I do want to mention that Tim from LA's book is out and available for
really?
Purchase. Yeah, and it's been out for about the last month. He's not, at this point, I don't know whether he's talking with me, but his book is out, and it's the UU Stories of People of Color, and it's being published by at lulu.com. So he's one of three authors, and I just wanted to let the Horn family know that it's available.
What's the title again, Larry?
It's UU Stories of People of Color or something like that. It's not the exact title, but it's – and Timmy is one of three authors of the book. And it's available on soft cover for $15. And as an ebook for $12, and if you sign up for lulu.com on your first purchase, you get 20% off. So it's going to be $12 plus shipping and handling for Timmy's new book.
Well, that's really cool. I knew he was working on it. I wasn't sure that it was out. I confess, I don't even know what lulu.com is.
Okay, lulu.com is a self-publishing platform.
Aha.
He self-published the book, and he sets the price, and he owns the copyright, and his author partners. So that's available for people, and I wanted the Horn family first thing to know that that's out there. If they're interested in doing that, I can imagine that a number of people would be, because that we a number of us know Timmy. So other than that, you know, I'm reading my book. I got a book at Half Price Books, Southbound, The History of Southern Rock. So I'm reading that, all about the Allman Brothers and.
Oh, cool. I would say that must be a good read.
Oh, that's a lot of fun for me to read. Talks about Muscle Shoals too.
Oh, cool.
And Phil Wald and all those people, and I figured Duncan would be interested in it too. I got it. It was remaindered. It's a $29 softback, but I got it at Half Price Books for $10. And you can still get it on Amazon for slightly higher. But in any case, and I saw Al Franken yesterday. I went to see Al Franken in an interview with David Talbot. And had him sign the book and had a little thrill going up the steep incline to get up on the stage so he could sign it.
Wait a minute. Was that a little bit of disability humor, Larry?
Yeah, that was a little disability humor.
Wait a minute. We don't have a lot of that, so Larry gets a cowbell.
Thank you. That's nice. Thank you very much.
Had a little bit of a thrill going up a steep incline. That's very nice.
Yay, Larry.
Yeah, that's right. So, I haven't talked to Charles for a while. I hope he's doing okay, given the fact that his back is... Hope he's okay, and hope you're okay, Rick. And I know, Duncan, you're okay, but, you know, I don't know how, you know, I haven't been in contact with Bob Lottie or with Timmy or with any of Steve or any of those other people. I don't know what's going on with them. But I did talk with Michael Merritt, so it was very nice. I haven't been following very much about the politics because, quite frankly, we're just all
going to hell, Larry. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Well, you know, I have this book. I found this book packed away, where Mercedes did, to be more accurate, Jobs for All. It was the plan that was Ron Dellums wrote a bill, H.R. 1050, back in the 90s to try to achieve jobs for all. And we're not even talking about jobs for all at this point. We're talking about how does the civilization survive. And so it's that's what can I say? The news upsets me, so I decided that I would save, protect myself. So in any case, that's what's going on. So y'all know Timmy's book is out. So
excellent. Well, we need to get Tim San to come on and talk about it.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, stick around, Larry. You don't have to run away or anything.
Thank you.
Hey, Les, is that you still there? Les? See, I've got icons for everybody, but whoever I think that.
Hey, I'm here.
Oh yeah, I just thought I'd check in with you. I hadn't hardly heard from you. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Bob? I had a different train of thought to go on, from what you guys are talking about with the mountaintop removal. But as you guys are talking about that, it made me wonder. This is a capitalist society. Why don't we have a capitalist solution for this? Like, for example, can we just get some big company to come buy up a whole bunch of cheap West Virginia land and start setting up wind farms and setting up solar farms and all that? And that way you can actually put something in front of people to get them away from coal.
Well, here's what it's an
infrastructure problem, Les.
Well, not just that, Sparky. Somebody already owns it all. See, coal companies don't own the land they blow up. That would be stupid. I'm not criticizing you, Les. I'm saying
no,
that's the way they view it. Why would we want to own land that we're going to ruin and make unuseful ever again? So instead, there are land companies like Roland Land Company that own hundreds, if not, well, no, thousands, tens of thousands of acres. See, long ago, capitalism came into West Virginia and bought damn near the whole state. And so they determine what gets done to and with the land. As an example, Coal River Mountain Watch really did have a wind power project a few years back. And we went to the Raleigh County Commission and said, look, you support the building of the wind farm, you get this much money over this many years. You support this mountaintop removal job, you get this much money, and then you don't ever get any more money again. And the county commission looked us straight in the eye and said, well, we don't want to feel like we're being put in the middle of a battle between the coal companies and you tree huggers. We'll just take the coal money. Wow. And then the coal money went away. Now, it gets worse, though, because we have mountains that are good for industrial wind turbines. Because if I said windmills, Sparky would reach through the internet and grab me by the neck.
No, I just scold you again.
Okay. But we had mountains. Notice the past perfect usage there on the verb. We had mountains in southern West Virginia that would have been great for industrial scale wind generation, wind power generation. Guess what happens when you take 800 feet off of an Appalachian mountain? Well,
take it out of the wind zone.
You pull it down out of the industrial wind zone. Exactly, Sparky. And then even if you could build, what do we call them, towers or standards or what, what you put the turbines on, even if you could build them.
You can't get them that high.
Even if you could build them 80 stories higher. Once you've blown up the mountain will no longer support the wind turbines because the earth is too unstable.
Oh.
You know, they try to build buildings on top of mountaintop removal sites, and it doesn't work. And the foundations shift, and they crack. And you can imagine how much fun that would be if, say, one wind turbine fell over into the next wind turbine, into the next wind turbine, into the next wind turbine. You see my point?
So that time is coming past. That's a done and finished deal.
Yeah, it's over.
All right.
Can I ask you a question, Bob?
Yeah.
How far is the closest high voltage transmission line to the Coal River Mountain?
There are some. You mean the ones that sit on the great big broad right of ways?
Yeah, the big towers, the 500,000 volt transmission line.
Yeah, 5-10 miles maybe.
Oh, okay. I was just thinking that. I mean, when they built the Hatch Mountain Wind Farm up here, it's only because there's a transmission line within a couple of miles of a almost brand new 500,000 volt transmission line was put through on the backside of Hatchet Mountain. Runs right over the top of Hatchet Mountain. Runs down through a place called Round Mountain. I worked on the substation there. So the wind farms are just
well, you right. You've got to get you've got to get the electricity to them.
Yeah, all you got to do is build a substation for the wind farm.
Yeah,
and then you can tie right into the transmission lines.
Yeah, these are not insurmountable problems. I mean, there are other places. There's a place called Mount Storm in West Virginia that has a wind farm on it, and all the electricity goes to New Jersey or something. Or maybe Washington, D.C.
It depends on where the line goes.
Right, exactly. because we haven't quite figured out how to.
Once you generate electricity, it's fungible as long as you can get it to market.
But you do lose it in you lose some in transmission, right?
Yeah, well, that's why they have substations. Buck up the power on it through a substation with more transformers. Power comes in and then it goes out. It comes in and it might have lost some voltage, but then they step it up again and then send it on again and it goes until.
And then Godzilla comes along and ruins everything.
Or like at Oroville Dam, the spillway failed and they had to take the transmission lines down.
Or all that can be put underground, thank you very much.
No, it can't, Steve. We've been down this road.
I know, but it can, Bob. I've got some proven articles I'll send you when you get back.
We've already got a blasting problem in Appalachia, Steve.
I don't want to blast anything.
Well, if you're going to bury lines in West Virginia, you're going to blast.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah. Oh, no worries. Yeah, I guess so. But just saying, it's not for aesthetics. It's for a more stable grid. You leave the ones up top going, and then you have the ones down underneath. Because if the ones underneath go, you're looking at a 1 to 2 year turnaround to even get them fixed. So
yeah,
but still, it would increase grid stability.
Well, how about this? Okay, so let's say the big wind farms idea is no longer viable over there.
Right.
Now, years ago, I used to work for DirecTV. I used to install little satellite dishes on the roof. How about all these out-of-work miners start setting up personal windmills and personal solar panels on people's house and say,
ta-da,
you know what, fuck the power grid. And just now everybody's, if your house can stand, you can put your own windmill and your own solar panels on there. And tell the power companies to go fuck himself.
Well, no, that's what I said a minute ago, Les.
Oh, you did. But
the front end of what you were saying, if we were really smart about this, the front end of what you're saying is where all the sense is. In California, if I understand correctly, Sparky is doing some of this. You subsidize individual homeowners and individual like apartment complexes, and you government subsidize the installation of solar panels, and you tie all of those into the grid, and therefore you've got added generation coming in, and that's where Smart Grid 2.0 comes in, so that you know, if the power goes out, boom, it gets redirected around wherever it went out to, and little hillbilly broadcasters like me don't wind up out of electricity for 3 fucking weeks.
Yeah, but I wasn't even talking about the grid thing yet. I was talking about initially on some Rick Perry, build it and then they'll come. If you guys, if every house sets up their own individual power station.
Yeah, but that, but
not
but
even see,
that,
the grid.
Yeah, but the problem there, Les, is storage. For instance, and I mean, I can tell you because I've done the research for this place.
Mm-hmm.
For me to put up a solar array that would essentially power everything here is about a $35,000 proposition. It turns into a $45,000 proposition if you put in like a propane-powered backup to carry the place for a couple of weeks. If the power
really that
out.
Much?
Yeah.
Then, Tesla wall?
But wait, we're not even to the fun part yet. If I want to tell Appalachian Power to come and cut their cord and coil it up and stuff it up their nasty coal-fired corporate ass, the storage costs, the battery costs, the inverters, all of that, plus the panels cost, for this 80-year-old house that isn't worth that, isn't even... Well, it goes over top of $100,000 for one house less.
Are you sure about that? Because I sent you something.
Yeah, I'm deadly certain because I've talked to the people who want to do the job.
Well, there's battery technology. They can put a block battery at each house. It's about half the size of a full-size file cabinet that will power a house for 2 to 3 years until they have to change it.
What do you mean by power a house? Because it is damn sure not going to run a furnace.
According to the 60 Minutes special I watch, Bob, it will. It'll power everything, you know. And
is that
I'll
Elon
send
Musk
to you? But, you know, the electric company squashed that and bought the patent out on it.
Oh, that Indian guy's thing?
Yeah, that's basically the same story as the early. It started circulating in the 1950s, 1960s. You know, the 100-mile-an-hour carburetor, or 100-mile-per-gallon carburetor. that it had been invented, and Detroit bought the patent and buried it.
The electric car is now dead. Yeah, I've seen that.
No, this was actually the story was it was a carburetor for a gasoline engine. But anyway, no, the storage isn't there yet. I'm talking about a 2-hour conversation I had, Steve. With people who are
expert. You're a lot smarter than me.
No. This isn't about how smart I am. It's how smart they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, no, I want off the grid. I want to tell Appalachian Power to go fuck itself and keep fucking itself till the sun goes out. And they laughed and they appreciated my sincerity. And they said, well, that's great. I said, so, you know, I want a bunch of lithium ion batteries. And they said, can't have them. Won't do the job. They said, what we use now are marine lead acid batteries in a big bank.
So 60 Minutes.
I said, what about Elon Musk? I said, what about Elon Musk and his wall battery thing? And they said, if we had a nickel for every time somebody thought that Elon Musk's wall battery was going to run their house, they said, it's not there.
He made it sound so easy, though. You know, you just replace it every 2 or 3 years and have a backup in case this one goes dead. And
yeah,
that's the one that goes with the solar powered roof, right? The solar powered shingles.
No, sir. This one is really just a standalone battery pack. It's about the size of a file cabinet, maybe half the size of that, and you put it in this little storage place, and it's allegedly is supposed to power your whole electrical needs for up to 2 to 3 years.
Charge.
Oh. It's okay, Duncan. Go ahead.
The Tesla Powerwall challenge works during the night while and charges during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say the reason California has these subsidies is because we have a cap and trade system in place.
Right. Which makes it viable. You've got to have an economic model out there that makes it possible to do. I mean, it's also why there are solar panels on just about every flat space pointing at the sky in Germany.
All right, well, let's couple these technologies in. Let's take this big old battery and couple it with the solar technology on your roof, and so they're charging back and forth, and we'll never have to worry about writing a check to the electric company ever again. And we could do it.
As long as the grid is up. I mean, that's one thing they explained to me. If a derecho comes through and takes the power out, your solar panels don't help you.
Why would you need a grid if every house is independently on its own power source?
That's what I'm talking about.
Right, because you can't... The battery technology, the storage technology, isn't there yet.
Hey, Bob, I sent something to you on Skype a while back. It was these guys that made a solar panel array that sits on a trailer. And then they got the inverters to charge everything. I think it was about 4,000 watts this puts out. It sits on a trailer, and it's just about, I think, like 5 or 6 batteries. It has a gasoline generator backup. It has the solar panels that flip out to about, I think, 8 foot tall by about 10 feet long. And then you could tilt them and aim them into the sun. You could park the trailer anywhere, you know, move it with your pickup truck, park it up, chain it to the ground and set it up. But I know from experience, I ran when Hurricane Sandy wiped out the power in my mother's house, I use a 3,000 watt generator, 3,500 watts peak, and I ran everything, including the furnace, in this house for weeks. And this thing's putting out 4,000 watts. And all you have to do to add to that, just in case you have a cloudy day, cloud usually brings wind and rain, then you have the windmill backup tying in. So when the solar panels aren't doing the job, the windmill is. And the windmill
will generate power through the night. Yeah, but you still got to have it. The domestic, you know, home wind is even harder to get at than solar is. Those little tiny wind turbines don't do a lot.
And then there's building codes against them, too.
Yeah.
There's building codes against, okay. So then if you leave the windmill out the equation, that was just me adding on.
In the future, what you're talking about, Les, is going to be what happens. Mm-hmm. But until there's a reason to do it, no one will. Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, I just got a note from Charlie, who said if we were to move from alternating current to direct current, getting off the grid would be much cheaper. But that's the whole thing. What you're doing with the batteries is DC. But it still takes a shit ton of batteries.
Well, let's even add this, Bob. Les and Bob. Every house usually has a creek somewhere running nearby. Let's put a water wheel and add that dynamic to it. Let's add hydro to it.
Oh, like, it gets no. There's really cool little hydro systems that just lay in the creek bed, and the little turbine turns and generates electricity. And
it's called a Pelton wheel.
Well, that technology goes back to the Little House on the Prairie days.
But you've got to scale it up to meet modern needs.
We had a cabin on the Trinity River. We used a Pelton wheel to turn an alternator to charge a 12-volt battery just so we could run lights in the cabin. We had 12-volt DC RV lights. I wired the whole cabin up with it.
And that's like the next thing we're going to go for here is a little dual-fuel 3,000-watt generator with a pure sine wave so that I can – I've got a generator that will run stuff, you know, in the rest of the house. But it won't do this stuff back here because the power is too uneven. So, you know, that's it'll run on propane or gasoline. And just having that set up with a 100-pound propane tank would get you through, you know, would make sure that this program stayed on the air through another derecho. Maybe we won't have another derecho in my lifetime. I don't know. But we had a one-week power outage in March. We had, and this is just ridiculous that we have these things, but it's a crappy grid. The derecho was 3 weeks. Sandy was 2 weeks. I can only imagine the horrors that your mom went through, Les. We got the backside of Sandy. We got an October blizzard.
I didn't even realize it reached that far over there.
Well, it mixed. There was stuff moving west to east, and then it got sucked in by the storm. And we got like 2 feet of snow in October, and it completely wiped out the grid again.
Wow.
Well, can we all agree our current grid system is archaic, and there has to be a better way? Can we at least all agree on that?
I can't say that in California, Steve. Yeah.
But I just wanted to break in. Yeah, I'm enjoying the conversation and learning a lot from it. I posted my Lulu account page in the text part of the chat. So if you all want to go and see what the title of Timmy's book is, you can look at it there. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Larry. I'm looking now. Well, darn. Just goes to a login page.
Yeah, you can't get in there, Larry.
Our grid technology is the same today in most places as it was back in the 30s.
Yeah, that's why every time the power goes out here, Steve, I refer to our antiquated, rickety, coal-fried power grid.
Right. Every time there's a lightning strike, I fear that I'm going to be out of power for 2 or 3 days. You know, and I'm sure you do too, Bob.
Well, I mean, around here, it poured the rain last night. And it seems like some little interesting something happens every time that I sub for Malloy. And last night it was rain. And it poured. And I was just sure the internet, because see, all it has to do is rain here, and the crappy internet goes out.
It's bringing a tree down somewhere that's busting a line, and that's just my take. I may be wrong, but that's probably what's the logistics is.
Well,
what is going on,
considering the fact that they had the ground all screwed up here, for all I know, they've got their own ground screwed up at the CO Frontier.
All right. There you go, folks. I just posted it.
Well, thanks, brother. That's nice. Nice of you. We'll check that out.
That's Tim's book. You can see the cover of it right there.
That worked, Larry.
Yeah. All right? Okay. Thank you.
Let's see here so we can tell people so they can go and look. Unitarian Universalists of Color, Stories of Struggle, Courage, Love, and Faith by Yuri Yamamoto, Chandra Snell, and Tim Hanami. I'm going to make sure that I get that.
Hey, my right-wing brother says that solar is not going to work.
Is this
now, why is he saying that?
He says that the panels don't... I shouldn't say right-wing brother. He's a libertarian type.
Then he's right-wing. He's right-wing.
Right. Well, he thinks that Trump's going to bring down the republic. You know, so he's not... so bad, but yeah, he's pretty much right wing. But he says that the panels aren't gonna don't last. He says that it creates. He says something about sludge, and that they don't last. He likes renewable energy, but he's on this nuclear thing. We had a heated argument,
God.
4th of July, about nuclear energy.
The panels don't melt down. The panels are gonna melt down, but nuclear is fine.
Right.
You know what doesn't last, John?
What?
Coal. You burn it, right. It's done. You know what else doesn't last? Gas. You burn it, it's done. You know what else doesn't last? Oil. You burn it, it's done. But then again, right. You know what lasts? It really, really lasts? Nuclear waste. Nuclear waste.
Oh. Right.
Tens of thousands of years.
Yep, I should say that. I should tell him that. I forgot to tell him. We got into an argument. I was like, yeah, right, solar is great. You know, I was talking up solar because I love, you know, the idea of solar is great. I love those lights that you can put in your yard or whatever around Christmas time or something that run on solar. I love that. I think that is the neatest thing, and it's just it gives me a rush just thinking about getting on a grid like that for the duration. Indefinitely, you know?
Yeah.
But real quick, I wanted to tell you guys about something here, and it has something to do – it's kind of like changing the subject a little bit. But I know we don't have a lot of time, so I'll just make it as cool. I'll just make it real quick. You know, I'm getting really, really sick of the unicorn sparkle fart people. It's getting out of hand, you know? I think I've mentioned a few times that I'm part of a political action committee. We got about 60 members, and our objective is to get local progressives elected to local offices, and it's working out pretty good so far. But you know, the head guy of it, the committee, the chairman of this committee, nice guy and everything, but he's kind of privileged. Well, I should say, the people in this committee, a lot of them are the sparkle fart types. And especially the chairman of it, and he's, you know, he's wealthy, you know, he's a businessman and stuff, but he voted for Jill Stein, but he's privileged, you know, and he sends out emails every now and then, and a week or two ago he sent out an email. It's usually about events. A week or two he sent out an email about complaining about the Democratic Party, how awful they are. He had all these bullet points on why the Democratic Party sucks so bad. And then he cited an Intercept article, and I read the article, and it, It's talking about how the Democratic Party needs to dissolve itself and step aside
and make way for
progressive, you know.
Was it by Glenn? Was it by Glenn Greenwald, perhaps?
No, it was some woman, and she. It's apparently she doesn't understand how politics works in America, and so you know. So I read the email.
Yeah, Democratic Party needs to get out of the way and let Jill do it if she can, like, you know, right. Find Washington D.C.
Yeah, exactly. On a map, you know.
Hello, Cleveland.
So, yeah, I remember that. So I said, okay, all right. I was going to reply because when you these emails go out to everybody in the group. And when you reply, everybody sees the replies. So I put the email to the side. I said, okay, all right. And because parties don't really matter that much on the local level around here. Because, I mean, as a matter of fact, a lot of people, even D-baggers, will register as Democrats and Republicans. It's just to get on the ballot, basically. But so another email he sent out the other day, it's about an event that we're doing with Democracy for America. And the Democracy for America is calling it like July Resistance or something like that, to that effect. And I saw the subject line and had the word resistance in it. And I thought, whoa, that's weird. Maybe he's starting to wake up a little bit because, you know, back right around the time that Trump was inaugurated, they kind of mocked the resistance movement. And they even gave me a weird look when I said that I'm part of the resistance right after the election. And so I opened up the email and he said, and in an email it said, and I'm not trying to bash these people. They're good people. They're doing the right thing, you know. They're better than a lot of other Sparkle Fart people because they're actually doing something. So nothing against them, all right? I'm not trying to use this as a platform to bash them. I'm just sort of venting because they're the only progressives that I can talk to besides you guys. So now I gotta complain about them to somebody, you know. But in this email it said, we're not resisting Trump and the GOP. We're resisting the Democratic Party.
Oh,
can you fucking believe that?
What is it? What is this pack?
It's a local thing. We call ourselves the East Wind Project. And we got an Act Blue account and stuff. It's pretty legit now. It started pure grassroots. I mean, it started out just a few meetings, a few people getting together. We had a couple rallies for Bernie. You know, and now we do – it just kind of snowballed from there, especially after the election. And so, I mean, I should have gave you a hockey puck warning before that. I was planning on giving you a hockey puck warning. But I read that in email, and I swear I wanted to kick furniture. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. So I did reply. I sent out a reply and said, whom do you think that benefits? You know, divorce, because it was, you know, because they always talk about how they want nothing to do with
the lesser of two evils is still evil.
Yeah.
Does Brain happen to be in this group, by perchance?
Oh, no, wait. Maybe I never got this. No, Brain finally wrote to me and confessed to being a wingnut.
Oh, yeah? But you know what? I thought about that. When, because you know they have that. You know that the right wingers put feelers out on our side, pretending to be. I noticed it during the election, pretending to be Bernie supporters and stuff like that. And you can, and if you press them a little bit,
they were the ones who were running around getting the hilarians all worked up by using the fun words.
Right.
The really, yeah. Really and fun words is not appropriate. Using the really, really nasty epithets. I'm convinced of that,
like,
because, you know, agent provocateur are always handy in situations like that. It's like what's going on with the G20. I'm heartily in support of people getting in the streets and protesting, especially protesting against the United States and our dumbass president who doesn't know shit from shinola about any damn thing on Earth. And especially his position on climate change, and lo and behold, the little black bloc pricks are always there to throw a brick through some poor storekeeper's window who's no more related to globalism than I am to the czar of all the Russias.
Right.
And you can't convince me that that's that some of those folks aren't plants, because there's too much evidence of too many occasions when people were caught. I remember the story of protests up in, I think, Quebec, when it turned out that the one guy that was going, "Hey, come on, let's throw a brick through a window," and he was exposed as an undercover member of the RCMP.
Oh, what's that?
Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Mounties.
I'll save you now.
You know, those guys, the red coats, the breeches, the blouson pants, you know.
Oh, okay. Is Canada part of the Royal
Commonwealth? The Commonwealth.
So the Queen presides over then, too?
No. They can tell her to go and do stuff that family does. But no, I mean, they're still it's still a Commonwealth of Nations.
Oh, okay.
I think
I wasn't sure about that. I was wondering about that the other day, actually.
By the way, I had a note coming in from James. Subject line: Solar Schmoller, and this gets a cowbell. Sun's gonna burn out, Bob. Then what? You'd be surprised the number of. You'd be surprised
Bob.
And
there are a number of people. I'm sorry.
No,
there are a number of people. I'm sorry. There are a number of people on the ex Malloy chat, or the ex chat that used to be connected with Malloy, that are now on their own. And we always have discussions, and I don't add a lot to them because I really don't know how to deal with it. They talk about the deep state and about how the CIA and the military and industrialists and all this, they're actually running the government, and they're actually a permanent government that runs things, rather than the official government that we all know about. Even if all this stuff could be proven, do you think the majority of people would even care?
Only to the extent that it actually touches their lives. I realize there's that element of people who think that anybody who ever delivered a cold cup of coffee to Jill Stein is fucking ponerized, and that Vladimir Pooty Poot is just a cuddly, huggly, snuggly bear. But I just can't get there. There's too damn much evidence. And I can't turn my brain off long enough to just buy into a giant conspiracy. Because let's remember that glorious WikiLeaks dump is the one that got that contained the information that got Comet Ping Pong Pizza started, and wound up getting that place shot up by an Alex Jones listener.
Because I really don't know how to, I know that there are a lot of deep state theories out there. I'm not talking about the one that Bannon, the Bannon crowd. I'm talking about the crowd that looks at the Martin Luther King assassination and the John F. Kennedy assassination and the connections with Dulles and the connections with the CIA. And I don't know how to approach that stuff, because nothing has ever been discussed in that manner, I mean, there's just been. I guess I'm asking for the second time, even if it could be shown that there is this shadow government, would the majority of people really care or do anything about it, or would it matter in the long run?
Only to the extent that it touched their lives. As long as they can still, as long as they can still define freedom as having a choice of 37 different kinds of breakfast cereal, as long as the cable stays on, as long as Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is there to tell them that all of their problems would go away if those liberals would just die, and if we hadn't had 8 tormented years of that Kenyan Muslim you slurper in their White House, no. No, they don't care, and they won't care, and why should they?
Okay, that's a good answer. And as far as Chris is concerned, I don't know what to tell you, but a lot of the people that I listen to are sharply critical of the Democratic Party, because they don't feel that the Democratic Party... they don't feel the Democratic Party is liberal enough.
I'm one of them, Larry.
Yeah.
But I also live in a world that's not inhabited by leprechauns and unicorns. Leprechauns and unicorns. And hobbits and hillbillies. And other imaginary creatures. I have to live in a world that is driven by empirical reality. And you know what? You know what bitching and complaining about the Democratic Party covers for in many, many ways, Larry? The failures of the progressive community. You don't like the way the Democratic Party is? By God, get out there and organize your little happy asses off and get more progressives elected.
Yeah, we had a situation in California where we have Eric Bauman, who I know pretty well, who is running. And then we had somebody else running against him, and she lost by about 30-some-odd votes, and she was supported by National Nurses United. And I don't know how she was going to challenge the Democratic Party chairmanship vote, but I don't know what happened as a result of that. But I'm certainly hoping that the party here starts adopting some of what the Progressive Caucus is doing or trying to do, because I know they're trying to do their best to push a Sanders kind of platform. I don't know. I just I guess I don't have anything else to say.
This would make for a great conversation if we were going to continue into hour three. The Democratic Party has a lot of flaws, but its flaws are not nearly as bad as those of the Republican Party. And those are the only two choices there are. And secondarily, anybody who listened to this program knows that I was a sincere and devoted and serious supporter of the candidacy of Bernie Sanders. But I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, he was robbed. When the fact of the matter is, he had no campaign in the South, and the primary system more or less starts in the South. And that gave Hillary Clinton a great big whopping lead. And she had been working on that campaign since before 2008. Why is that so hard to understand? You know, the fact of the matter is, well, what about the DNC emails, Bob? Well, those DNC emails were written after Bernie had effectively lost the primary in the first place. And so, you know, instead of in and you know, it kind of tells me that a lot of the folks, you know, they're not like college football fans. Because if they ever had a college football team that they rooted for, they would know that any college football coach worth his salt says, you know, I don't care if the referees stole the game from us outright and everybody saw them do it. It went into the column. It went into the loss column. It's going to stay in the loss column. And if we sit around pissing about what happened last week in the loss column, I can guarantee you there ain't going to be many games go into the win column. And that's where the progressive movement is right now. They're bitching about they're bitching about the last game, which guarantees they're going to lose the next game. Go ahead.
I totally agree with you, but I see it from a different standpoint. As one of the former Bernie or Busters who had to get dragged kicking and screaming to vote for Hillary, they don't care. They don't have, like, I'm not deep into having anything myself. I just basically got my first house 2 years ago, right? I'm just across that line where I have something that I'm scared to lose. These people, they have nothing. And they blame, rightfully so, they blame the Gen Xers, they blame the boomers for putting them in the situation And they would rather, I don't agree with their methodology, but they would rather burn it all down and start from fresh than to send a fresh progressive into a corrupt Democratic Party so they could become a corrupt Democrat down the road. Now, does it make sense? No, because if we go into another depression, we're going to stay there and America's done. But I think they're not thinking far enough down the line to see that, you know, going into another depression, you know, maybe they look back in history and said a depression is what gave us FDR in the first place. So maybe if we let it all burn down, then at the other side of that will be a Bernie or somebody like a Bernie. You know, after
well, I mean that's the hope list, but it's far from guaranteed. There are other countries at the same time that burned it all down, and they didn't get anything resembling democratic socialism. Instead, they got right wing brutal fascism. And right now, if it all burned down in the United States, Les, I guarantee double to you that's where we'd wind up. Pure, straight-up fascism. We haven't talked to Jules this evening. Let's check in before we get out of here. Hey, Jules.
Hi there. Sorry about that. I had to jump in late. I got called away because I had to finish fixing a fence. But anyway, I just wanted to jump in. You guys were talking about renewables earlier and the challenges that y'all face. I just want to make a few quick points. The Dutch have come a long way. They were lagging a lot with their renewable energy. They have actually turned their whole their national train system. They use a lot of public transit in the Netherlands. They've turned their entire national train system into being entirely wind powered.
Hey, Jules, guess which European nation uses more mountaintop removal coal than any other nation in Europe?
Yep.
The
like
Netherlands,
I said, they've been very, very far behind in their ways of doing things.
And they're still there.
And they are still there, but they are improving. They also have a test program going on outside of Amsterdam, in a little town called Almere. It's an entirely self-sustaining city. They use solar, et cetera, solar power. They handle their own bio-waste. They handle their own growing with vertical growth methods, you know, that type of thing. And they grow. They have their own animals. They do their own fisheries, that type of thing. And they're doing everything self-sustaining. And it's a test city. The things that they can do, try to set up these small areas of growth where they can do it in a small amount of time in areas that are not necessarily sustainable, but where they can maintain growth and do it in a quick area, you know, non-hospitable areas in the future, so that they can, you know, these little towns, these little villages in the future, so we don't have the problem with the migration because of droughts, etc. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the Dutch also have the concept of the polder, which is a really intense dynamic of community that this country does not have. But anyway, you slice it. I got to get out of here because 8 o'clock is fast approaching. Thanks, Jules. Good to hear from you. Thanks to everybody who jumped in on the conversation this evening. Thank you to Les. And John in Central PA, good to hear from you, Larry. Thanks, Charlie, for chiming in. Thank you, Rick, for getting us started by meeting Dr. John's challenge. Wait, who am I missing? Oh, okay, I think I've got – and thank you, Steve, from Georgia Stan. Thank you always, Sparky, for moderating the Friday on the Front Porch Skype chat group. And thanks to all of you who made another Friday night miracle of the non-supernatural kind. Human grit and human determination. Thank you to Darlene and Bob in Texas. And thank you so very much to Nancy. And thanks very kindly to our friend in Fort Myers. Thank you to David. And thank you very much to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy, who got us all started. So taken together with Sparky's challenge, we've done it. We've raised 2 weeks of funding in 1 week, and that means that thanks to you, Coal River Mountain Watch, and the people affected by mountaintop removal poison will be represented in Washington, D.C. next week in the form of humble me. Thank you. So it's time to reboot and retool. A reminder, please. Everybody, I will keep the stream up at White Rose and at headon.live, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. But please, if it is at all possible for you, and you want to listen to the Malloy program, listen to it on Progressive Voices. Last night, you guys helped Progressive Voices beat Fox News. You really did. You made Progressive Voices trend number one on TuneIn last night. So if you can listen on TuneIn to the Progressive Voices channel, that's helpful. That's awesome. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this program in whatever way you do, whether you do it live or whether you do it in the podcast. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our chat room moderators, Sparky, and our midweek utility chat room moderator, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And a quick reminder, starting right now on FYI Nation, FYINation.com, the Terra Buster, Tara Devlin, to fill out the remainder of the hour between this and the beginning of Malloy. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'll be back as soon as I can get back. The sooner the better. Take care. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. See you in a few.